Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, stock valuation. I am going to make this a very much a spreadsheet or a dedicated lecture on how to value stocks. And then, of course, we have our quiz, which will be starting at the appropriate time. But to start, well, if I turn on the, there we go. Forgive me for that. Okay, let's get started here. I'll look at the numbers to begin this today. And as you can see, somewhat, well, I did have this working okay. And now I don't have it. Bear with me one moment here. There we go. We have a bear, it's something of a bear day. It's not a massive bear day, but it is enough to give us notice. The Dow is down more than 3/4 of a, oh. Well, I pushed that. What's up here? Give me a second here. Thank you for letting me know. I was just going to keep talking there. Okay, let's try it this way. There it is. Okay, thank you. As you can see, it is a bear day. The Dow is down more than 3/4%. Interestingly enough, the S&P 500 is down about the same amount. And then the NASDAQ is down pretty heavy, which is to be expected because it's higher risk stocks. So you've got a little more risk, well, it's considerably more risk, and so the swings will be harder on the NASDAQ. But on the other side of the world, you didn't have hardly anything to speak of. The Nikkei did a drop after the opening, but it came back and it ended up about where it had started. And the Hang Seng, the Chinese seems to have had a pretty strongly bull bear day there, although it started recovering after the real drop. And then Europe was about the same. You got just not a bullish day. It wasn't a horrible bear day, but we've been seeing a little more of this, and you're starting to see among what I've been seeing among traders is more talk about something coming bad or a bear market coming, but they're still not really convinced of that. And overall, there's still a bullish sentiment in the market, but that may change. Interestingly enough, gold actually finally eased back up. It kept going up and up, and finally it's pulled back a little bit from what you saw last week. But it's still above $4,000 an ounce. But I noticed that it started to recover in the last few hours. It started coming back, so we may see it go up again today by the end of the day. But obviously, we've got crude oil is way below where it should be. The Brent has recovered a little bit, back up above $60 a barrel. But still, I mean, oil prices are very low right now. And as I've said quite a few times, eventually we'll see gasoline prices easing back, but they just seem to be stubbornly above, for most places, above $3 a gallon still, even though they probably should be quite a bit less than that. They're just not seeing it. Here's an interesting thing real quick here. Notice that this was an odd thing. If you remembered some of these sector maps in the past, what was red in the bold in when the overall pattern was green are green now when the overall pattern is red. So in other words, it looks like a lot of investors were diving out of things that they had been buying into, and they were putting the money back into things that they had been kind of sour on. So we have technology, which is pretty unusual for the technology sector to actually be in the bear territory today. Even in bear markets, the technology stocks are, you know, pretty much green, bullish. But here today, they are taking a little bit of a smacking around, which, you know, I guess they had to take a breather. But you notice that consumer defensive, healthcare, which were oftentimes red in the past few weeks, they're green today for some reason. And so, you know, there you are. The ones that we had been relying on to be bullish, they took a day off. We hope it's only one day, but who knows? I'll show you just, I'm going to just pull a stock out of the mix of the ones that I usually use. Let me think. Now, I cannot remember the name of this stock, so you'll have to forgive me a little bit here. Kellogg is an old company. You probably know it mostly for its cereals, which has always been its staple. And Kellogg has been around. It's been a low beta company for a long time because it sells something that's a basic. Its revenues come from basic things like cereals and breakfast stuff and all that. But interestingly enough, it changed its name last year to Kellanova, of all things. And I'm not sure how that worked. There was a merger or something that was involved in this. But as you can see, it still has one of those spectacularly low betas. This one is, I think this might be one of the lowest betas I've shown you. And that's just because the stock is so secure against economic fluctuations, macroeconomic fluctuations. It's such a basic of life, cereal is. You notice that it is undervalued. It's obviously a profitable company. And it pays a very nice dividend. So this is that kind of company that if you're a defensive investor, you can't beat a Kellogg in your portfolio. But let me show you something. I haven't done this for a while, so I did want to give you a chance to see that holding period return, the annualized return again, just to keep that in your mind so you don't forget. It's one of those things that it's going to be on the final exam. It's just one of those things that we want you to know by the end of the course. But if we go through and look at this, the target price, and I'm going to find a calculator here. A one-year price is projected to be $83.30. So we're going to take $83.30 divided by a purchase price 1 year earlier of $83. And then we minus one. And then we times that by 100 to make a percentage. And you'll notice that this is just not a very spectacular stock. Wait a minute. Let's try that again. 83, 39 divided by $83 and then minus one. And then we times that by 100. Yeah. The capital gain on this stock is less than 0.5%, 0.47%. This is not going to make you a millionaire. And a lot of that is because that beta is so ridiculously low. Low risk, low return. It's way back there on the capital, on the securities market line, but I do have to add in the dividend, plus our 2.8% dividend. So your total holding period return for Kellogg is a lousy 3.27%. But it is not lousy because that's probably what the beta is telling us from CAPM. We could run this through CAPM and we would see that, yeah, you're not going to get a high return because the beta is so low on this. And that's just the process of the market. This stock isn't a bad investment. It is an investment that is, you get a return commensurate with the risk that you are willing to take for this thing. It's not a great, you're not going to make a fortune off it. It's just going to slowly crawl upward. Another thing about this stock is that this is a stock that we would refer to, and that's kind of one of the important things. This is a high dividend yield stock. Now, in portfolios, especially some investors' portfolios, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for most of the return that they get from the dividends. They're not looking for skyrocketing stock price. They just want dividends. And there are ETFs that all they are is high dividend yield portfolios. In other words, stocks, they don't go up in price very much, but they pay a nice dividend. And so there's one of the things that is attractive about a Kellanova is that it is a high dividend yield stock. You're going to get your make money off this because you get a dividend check every quarter or every 6 months or every year, whatever it is that you want to use in your models. So that's where most of this comes from, is this idea of high dividend yield stocks. Ideally, you'd like to have them go up in price a little more too, but this is a very low beta stock. Now, another one I think I've brought this one up before, but I'll show it to you again. MMM. 3M Corporation. It's a little bit of a different story for this one. It's down a little bit right now, nothing spectacular. But notice that this is on the other side of beta. This one is probably, there's more risk with this one, so you expect a higher return. And it does have a dividend, a decent dividend yield. It's a little bit undervalued here. But let me just do this one more time so you have it in your notes so you never forget how to do it. Is that we're going to take the price in 1 year projected, which is $172.38, and we're going to divide that by an initial price of $166.52, and then subtract the one. And the result we multiply by 100 equals. And then, so in other words, your capital gain yield on this projected to be 3.52%. That's actually not good at all. That's actually a low capital gain. Now we add in the dividend, 1.75%. So the return, the total holding period return for a 1 year holding period is a lousy 5.27%. And that truly is lousy because you're taking a more than market risk. You're above one on the beta to make a lousy 5.27%. That's not, that one would flag as a truly sour investment. Kellanova, with its small holding period return, it's got a low beta. That's what you expect. But with a stock like this, with a higher beta, a beta above one, you would expect this stock to be paying more than that, certainly. Now, if I want, and let me take you on one more walk on the wild side, and this all kind of dovetails into the lecture. Apple. Well, isn't that interesting? This one is projected to actually lose money over the next year. Look, watch. I'm going to take my 1 year target price, in this case, is going to be $152.36, I think that is. $152.36 in 1 year. Divided by, no, I didn't do that right. It's 252. 252.36 divided by 257.38 equals minus 1 equals times 100. Wait,
You divided too many things.
Yeah, I know, I can see that. I got ahead of myself there. Actually, I'm surprised by this one. This one's kind of taking me a little bit by surprise. I wasn't expecting this. 252.36 divided by 257.40. 40 minus 1 equals times 100. So the stock itself, the capital gain, is negative 1.96%. You will actually lose on this stock price. But the dividend kind of saves it, but the dividend is lousy. So plus a 0.4% yield on the dividend. This stock, the total holding period return for a one-year hold, is negative 1.56%. So the projection here is that you will actually lose money, even including the dividend, which is lousy for this stock. It's 0.4%. This is, and look at the beta on this. The beta is above 1, isn't it? Or is, yeah. Let me magnify that a little bit. Yeah. This is a beta that is above market risk, and this is projecting that you'll lose money on Apple this year. You would actually lose. This is a capital loss kind of environment. So it helps when you're looking at these just to get a feeling for the landscape of risk versus return on stocks, which is what I talked about last week. In a case like this, you've got a high beta stock and it's got an actually negative return. But people would buy Apple because it's Apple. The sentiment might drive you. Yeah, Apple's a great company, it's a successful company, I'm going to buy stock in it. But if you look at the numbers, for heaven's sakes, you actually see that this is not a good investment at all. And there are a few other technology stocks that I could show you that have similar patterns where you know the company, it's just a gut feeling, this is a good place to put some, buy some stock. But if you look at the projections, the numbers and the projections, this is not a very good company at all. And notice, interestingly enough, that Apple is somewhat overvalued even. Yeah, at 39. Yeah, this is one that is a hard no. If you look at numbers. Now, if you look at sentiment, okay, Apple's a great company, I'll buy it because it's always going to do well for me in investment. No, it's not. Not according to these numbers that we're looking at here. And that's about what we can do, unless we're some kind of stock geniuses. We follow the science. We look at the numbers, and that's what we do in business. We rarely rely just on our gut feeling about the success or the fail or lack of success of an investment or of a project. Now, let me take you over here. We're going to do this today. Bear with me 1 minute here. And let me... Okay, today. Let me do this again. There we go. Today, business 101, file 101. Okay, good. Okay, do your attendance radar. This way, get that out of the way. While you're doing that, let me get you prepped up here. Oh yeah, good day. Okay. Now, now that you've done that, here in your spreadsheets, this is kind of a sprawling spreadsheet that I'm showing you here. Stock valuation. Download it. And I'll walk you through how, more or less, the outline of the machinery, and then I'll finish this up on Monday. But essentially, we are working on the going concern assumption that is pervasive in accounting and in finance, that there is not a definable end to a corporation. If it is here now, it will be here in the next period. And if in any period we are making financial statements, it will be there in the next period. That's accounting's way. In our world, we are saying, if it is paying a dividend this year or the next year, it will continue to pay dividends. And it is from those dividends that we have our best way to value the stock. The simplest model, which is kind of unrealistic, but it's one that we use, is what's just sort of to get you your feet wet in it. It's called the dividend model. Now, the dividend model works like this. It just says, look, the company's going to pay dividends for a certain period of time, and then we're going to dump the stock. In the model that I've got here, you could go as far as 7 dividends before you 7 years before you dump the stock. But all of these work on the present value idea. We're going to get a dividend in a year, $1.90. So let's find the present value of that dividend. And then a year later, we're going to get a dividend of $2.35. And so let's dump that, then let's take the present value of that dividend and add it to the first present value. And then in the third year, we're going to get a dividend of $2.75. So let's find the present value of that one, add it to the mess up there. Also, at the end of the year, we're going to dump the stock, and we're projecting that we'll get $15.89. So let's find the present value of that and add that to the mess. And the sum of those present values is the value of the stock right now. I mentioned something right here. When you have a projected value in the future, we call that a horizon value. We are seeing it on a horizon, in this case of 3 years. This plays a part in the most complex of the models, the horizon value model. But for right now, all you're doing in this spreadsheet is putting in the stupid dividends and putting in what you're projecting to be the stock price in at the end of the dividends. And you obviously have to have a discount rate to find a present value. You put that in. And I tell you all of these pieces of information, and here's the present value of the mess. That's the present value of the mess, right there. You don't have to do hardly anything. Now, if you've ever done present values by hand, or even with a table, like they do in accounting, it can take you a while. Here, it's finding the present value discounted at 6.95% of $1.90 1 year out, plus the present value of $2.35 2 years out, plus the value of $2.75 discounted back 3 years, and then plus the present value 3 years out of $15.89. And that's the end of the problem. You don't have to do any more with this problem. So this is one, and I will ask this on the next quiz, obviously not on this one, but on the next quiz, and you'll get one of these on the final exam. And this has got to be one of the simplest problems you can ever hope to have, is one that happens this easily. Now let me show you the next one. I told you about a perpetuity, the same amount of money you get every year forever. And I'll do a little more with that on one day. But the present value of a perpetuity is just the payment divided by the discount rate. You pick a discount rate. So in other words, if I'm going to get $500 every year forever, and I discount that cash flow, let's say 3.85%, I can tell you what that perpetuity is worth today. That eternal $500 a year forever is going to get you, let's get a calculator out here. I'll just take $500 divided by the discount rate, 0.0385. And that's worth $12,987 today. That's all there is to it. Not complicated at all. And it seems kind of odd. And I've had a few people, not exactly college students, but I showed them this formula for a couple of things that we can use this formula for. And they said, well, wouldn't $500 or $1,000, whatever, forever be worth an infinite amount now? No, it wouldn't, because the farther out you go, the deeper the discount is on that $500. $500 in 100 years is worth pennies as a present value. And that's what's happening here, is the perpetuity actually settles out to a final value as time goes on. That's a perpetuity. However, that is actually a simple version of a constant. This is a no growth perpetuity. It's a special example of another kind of perpetuity, a constant growth perpetuity. A constant growth perpetuity is one that grows by the same amount every period, every year, whatever. Year, month, whatever. That one has a little bit different look to it. The present value of this kind of a perpetuity is the payment that you will get next time divided by the discount rate minus the growth rate. Now, the payment in the next period would be the current payment times 1 plus the growth rate. You have to use the payment one period from now to get the answer, the right answer. This is actually a realistic valuation formula for certain types of stock. I'll take this back just a step. I can't remember whether I've told you this in class or not. There was a few of my clients survived. They'd gotten on their feet and they were starting to get in revenues. They had crossed break even, and they had positive earnings. And we were getting some pressure from the shareholders to start paying a dividend, a signal that we're okay. You know, the stockholders had been patient with the company, but they were starting to get a little fussy because we didn't pay dividends. We just plowed everything back into the company. And so there was a board meeting one late afternoon, and the CEO said, "Is it time for us to pay a dividend?" And that's a loaded question, because on the one hand, yeah, we should probably start to quiet the shareholders and also to start getting the fund managers on Wall Street to notice that we're there. We're paying a dividend. But here's the thing is, I said, this is like kind of like the Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. See, once you start paying a dividend, your stockholders start expecting a dividend from you. And you're not going to be able to pay the same dividend year over year over year. Some years you're going to make more money. You can pay a generous dividend. Some years you won't make as much money. You might not even pay a dividend. So it's going to be volatile. However, there is a time in a company's life when it has stabilized the dividend. And then, in other words, they're paying the same dividend every year. But then there's a time when they start to grow it at a constant rate. That's the sign of a mature company. Those are companies that Wall Street likes to see, look at, because they are predictable. The formula for valuing the stock of a company that pays a constant growth rate dividend is easy. I've got it on the next sheet here, how you do it. And it's this formula right here. All you do is you just say the price of the stock right now is going to be the dividend one period out divided by the discount rate minus the growth rate. That's all there is to it. This is the valuation formula for an old, mature company that pays constant dividends. I actually once, more than a few years ago, I thought, okay, do older companies that pay dividends really grow them at a constant rate? So I just ran about 10 companies. I think one of them was Target, that are old seasoned companies. I looked at their dividend year to year, divided this year's dividend by last year's dividend, minus one to see the growth rate, did that over the past, say, 5 years. Sure enough, these old companies, that growth rate of the dividend was more or less constant. Sometimes it was a little more than a certain number, sometimes a little less, but it always seemed to stay right on this growth path. That is, and of course, if that's how all we'd have to do to find the price, the value of the intrinsic price of a stock, heck, that's going to be, fund managers are going to love stocks like that because they can easily find intrinsic value to see whether it's overvalued or undervalued. So let me show you that formula right now. In action, what we do is we say, okay, first, we need to know what the company's current dividend is, because we're going to have to grow it one period to use the formula. Excel does that for you. We'll need to find the discount rate, and we'll need to find the growth rate. So we put those in there, okay? This company has just paid a dividend of $1.20. And we discount these cash flows at 8.55%, the dividends. And this constant growth rate we have found, or the company is telling us, it may even say we're trying to maintain this target growth rate, 2.50%. It runs that formula right there, and there's the price of the stock, $20.33. That's all you have to do. You don't have to calculate dividend one. You don't have to divide by R minus G. It's all done for you. That's all there is to it. And again, this would take you a while. It's easy to make a calculation mistake, but this Excel sheet does this for you. A side note here. This formula would not work if the growth rate were above the discount rate. That actually could happen. And it goes to something I may have mentioned before, what's called sustainable growth rate. A company that grows too fast for too long actually will implode. It concerns us. There is what is called a sustainable growth rate, a growth rate that the company could keep going on forever. But if it can't stop growing too fast, it has a very good chance of simply imploding from that excessive growth rate. We have many case studies of companies. They had growth rates of 40, 80, 100, in one case, 150% per year. And they just kept growing like that instead of slowing down. They didn't understand that it looked great. Look how great we are. We're growing at this insane rate. Well, they just collapsed under the weight of the growth that they were under. So this formula is actually, in a hidden sort of way, telling us that valuations that are mathematically sound for real stocks need to have growth rates that are sustainable. In this model, a growth rate that would be above the discount rate for the dividend cash flows would be an unsustainable growth rate. We can't value the stock, partly because we have to wait for the growth rate to slow down a little bit, partly because we might not even want to talk about that stock, because that growth rate, if they just keep growing that fast, they're not going to make it. And it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but if you think about it, you're my son. Well, at the age of 5, you were a little dwarf, 4 foot tall. And then at the age of 8, you were 5 feet tall. Then at the age of 12, you were 6 feet tall. And then at the age of 18, you were 7 feet, 10 inches tall. What the hell, man? Will you leave my refrigerator alone? Stop eating. Okay? You understand, though, that something is going to go wrong. Someday you're going to come in, "Hi, Dad." Boom! Well, your head popped off. At least now you're only 8 feet 4. That's what we're getting to, is that in systems we see that if they overwork themselves, they do tend to come apart. You see that with machinery. We can push a car so far, but if we go over a certain speed, something like that, yeah, it'll do it, but then you're cooking the engine. And that's the same physics principle going on here. I'm going to quit this for now. I want you to get started on your quiz. And when you're finished with the quiz, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.